All right, everybody, this is Nick Wolf again with First Baptist Brookhaven. This is what I'm calling the FBC Brookhaven podcast. How awesome is that, Emma?
Amazing.
Amazing. So creative. This is our fourth episode, and I am joined today over here on microphone number one, Miss Lisa Furlow. Say, hey, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey,
Brother Nick. Yeah, hey, Emma.
It. You're getting that little southern accent down. Took you a few decades, huh? Yeah. Well, welcome. All right. Over here on microphone two is her daughter, Miss Emma Mirabal. You know, I always doubt myself when I say your last name. Say, hey, Emma.
Hey.
Do I say it right?
Say my last name.
Mirabal.
Yeah.
You got it.
Why does everybody want? I guess in Mississippi, you just want to say Mirabal.
Mirabal.
It's either Mirabal or Marble.
Marble. Well, y'all, as you know, we've been doing some recording with the missionaries, I like to call them that, who've stepped on foreign soil in 2025. As you know, on August the 3rd in the AM worship service, we hosted the International Mission Celebration, and it was a fantastic morning. Everybody did great, but you know, we just can't cover everything in a short period of time. So we wanted to, you know, just give a little space in this format to hear from Emma and her experience. Y'all know that she went to the Philippines and was there for 3 weeks. Is that what you told me?
Yeah.
Told us, yeah. So with that, we're just going to launch right off into the experience there. First of all, tell us, remind us, you went to the Philippines. Who'd you go with?
I went with Nehemiah Teams, which is through the IMB.
So the International Missions Board, that's yes. What the IMB is.
Nice.
We also have the NAM, N-A-M-B, the North American Mission Board. But you went with Nehemiah Teams. Tell us yes. about the Nehemiah Teams.
So Nehemiah Teams, like, this is basically how I knew about this, was the first thing that you do once you're with Nehemiah Teams is you go to orientation. And there were 177 students with Nehemiah Teams going to over 18 countries. And that, I don't really know exactly how to explain that, but they just send students out everywhere. And one, their like theme saying is leading young people to finish the Great Commission in this generation.
Yeah. So Nehemiah Teams is an effort of the IMB mm-hmm. to get high school students engaged in foreign missions in a real way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Training up the next generation yeah. of missionaries, yeah. really focusing on those older high school kids and younger college kids.
Because 3 weeks is a big commitment, you know, for a four, you know, four missions. We'll think the other teams, they would go for a week, you know, and, right. And so you plan out a week. But a high schooler in the summer has a little more time. And so if we can get 3 weeks out of you and you really get exposed to mm-hmm. a culture then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the name of the town or the area or the city or?
So our final destination was in Davao, which is the third largest city in the Philippines. But then we drove 2 more hours and ended in Davao del Lacer.
Okay.
So I stayed mainly in there. We left it to go somewhere for like a day or two, but.
All right. So I want to zoom out and I want to talk about how do you get from, what's the road y'all live on? California Road? How do you get?
We live on Rollins Drive.
I'm sorry, Rollins Drive. So, all right, you live on. How do you get from Rollins Drive to that really cool name of that place you said that you went to over there?
So you drive 1 hour to Jackson.
All right, you go to Jackson,
and then you take 2 plane rides to orientation.
I think you need to talk about your orientation and yeah. training. Too.
Okay,
my orientation and training.
Yeah. So where was orientation?
So orientation is in Mentone, Alabama.
Okay.
Which is like northern Alabama, right next to Tennessee, and that was probably the hardest part of it. was orientation.
Do they have electricity at orientation?
No.
Oh, well, hold on a second. I know it's Alabama, but we would think they had electricity up there.
No. No electricity. Your bathing situation is a giant bucket that everyone uses. All the girls that are staying there will use the same bucket with lots of smaller, like, 5-gallon buckets with little, like, ladle-type things.
And oh, they're really
dump it on
you.
Yourself. Really, yeah.
They are. This is real prep.
And then
prep.
Your bathroom situation is essentially just a hole in the ground, but it's, like, it's an outhouse, and there's a front, and there's a back, and there's a wall separating the two, and then there's just two holes in the ground on either side.
Now, see, this is why we have a podcast, you know, because this might not be suitable for the AM worship service. So, all right, hold on now. I have questions. All right. So, Mentone, Alabama is a place that IMB sends missionaries in general to learn how to adapt to real life situations in other foreign countries. And that's what the orientation was. Yeah. They were prepping you, hey, where you're going, you may not have electricity.
Yeah.
You may not have a potable water or a bathroom. Okay. And you were there for how long?
That's specific to Nehemiah.
Yeah.
Teams.
Nehemiah Teams owns that.
Okay. Okay.
That's only Nehemiah Teams.
Oh, so they just put the high schoolers through that.
They put the high schoolers and college students through that.
That's, that's hilarious. Okay, so they are really testing your calling.
Yeah.
I got it. So how long were you there?
I was there 5 days, 4 nights. 5 days, four nights.
Okay, and that was just a drive up?
That was a flight over.
Okay, you fly.
Because it was VBS week, and so Mom couldn't take off of that Thursday.
No, she couldn't.
It was a flight early in the morning on VBS Thursday.
Okay.
Out of Jackson.
I went from Jackson to Atlanta to Chattanooga.
Yes.
And then it was another 2-hour drive to Mentone.
Okay. Okay, now there was another thing that y'all were talking about, orientation and then some other training.
That is. It's all,
all in one.
They do orientation training all together in Mentone.
A training, part of the training, orientation, was security training.
Okay.
So that put us under circumstances where it just lets you know how you would react in certain situations. And one of those was active shooters. So there were a bunch of men who they all worked there. But they were shooting blanks at us. So it was like real guns, real noises, real everything. And we had you had two rendezvous points. One was the girls' cabin, one was the boys' cabin. And during our first one, we had just gotten done taking a group picture after lunch. So, like, all 177 of us were all right there. So, perfect timing for them. And our leader, because we were in what they called, I forgot what it was called. We were in, like, the training time. Okay. And so, we knew that there was something coming. Role play mode is what they called it. And they had just said it right before, and so we're like, all right, something's going on. So we took our backpacks, and we put them next to where we're taking our picture. So right after we got done taking our picture, all the NT for teens, which was my team, we grabbed our backpacks, and we start hearing gunshots, so we hit the ground running. And I had other people's bags in my hands, so I was, like, running with hands full of bags. And we were heading to our cabin, and there was a shooter right in front of us, so we had to turn around and go to the boys' cabin. And so that one lasted for 10 minutes because they told us the statistics of active shooters, and it lasts from anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes. So they gave us 10 minutes for our first one and, like, 5 for the second one because there were two different times. But, yeah, that was part of training.
Wow. So they're prepping you really for
anything.
My goodness.
And the Nehemiah teams, if I'm not mistaken, sends kids into some really hard
They do.
Areas too, not just the Philippines, where, you know, that's an open country, but they send teenagers and college kids into closed countries as well.
And that's so
that's the training. That's
let's
the
talk about that, Mom. how did you wrestle with that?
I was blissfully unaware until she came home and told me all of this.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't tell you that part about training.
I knew that she was going to the Philippines. And that's really far away, of course. So there was lots of time spent praying for her safety.
Yeah.
but I didn't know about all the extra stuff. We really weren't sure what to expect with training.
Yeah.
But when she came home and was telling us, you know, it's just one of those things that that sort of training is good for anything.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know, so. And it's the reality of going to different places, and absolutely. You want to be prepared, and they you prepared
know how
you.
You'll react.
Yeah. They want to see yeah. how you'll do. And of course when, all right. So that was part of your travel. Yeah. All right. Now we're still trying to get from Rollins Drive over to
Davao.
Yeah. All right. So you come back. All right. Now you're going back to Jackson, okay. and you're hopping on. Oh, okay.
No, I don't come back from training. Training.
Oh, okay.
Training right. started June 5th, and so then I left June 9th and headed to Atlanta, and from Atlanta we took a flight to Los Angeles, and on that flight I actually had to have a gospel conversation with someone who was heading towards Manila, which is where we were going after. And they were just talking about this wedding that they were going to and all that stuff. And they were talking about how they had just moved to Alabama and they had no Filipino friends. And I told them how I met someone that lived somewhere in Mississippi. I don't remember where she lives, but I met her at M4 camp last year, who was Filipino. And they were all talking about then how they knew of someone who lived close by. Because where's M4 at?
They hosted at Walkaway Springs.
Yeah. Yeah. It was whatever school is close to there.
Okay.
And they were like, yeah, we know people from there. Because at the time I remembered where that was, but now I don't. But they were talking about how they know people from there, and I told them her name, and they were like, oh, yeah, we know her. So I was like, well, that's crazy. Yeah. So, yeah.
On a flight from Los Angeles.
From Atlanta to Los Angeles. And then we had a
really long layover.
10-hour.
It was a long layover.
It was a 10-hour layover in Los Angeles, and then we had a 15-hour flight from Los Angeles to Manila, and then we had to go through customs, which is interesting to
yeah,
say the least.
Yeah, it is always interesting.
But ours was really easy, and then they kept asking me if my leader was my mom, and I was like, no, that's our adult. I was like, that's not my mom. That's my adult.
I claim them as an adult.
Because they told us not to use the word leader or anything. So I was like, that's my adult. And then we exchanged our money and did all that. And then we got on a 2-hour flight from Manila to Davao. And then a 2-hour drive from Davao to Davao del Sur.
Okay.
To go to the farm.
So that's everybody listening. That's how you get from Rollins Drive to Davao
del Sur.
Del Sur. All right. So now we're in Davao del Sur. Tell us a little bit about that town.
So I stayed on
big town, little town.
I don't really know how it extends. It's just a bunch of villages.
Okay.
But where I stayed, I was on a farm.
You were at the agricultural center, right?
Yeah, I was at the agricultural center, which, fun fact, was started by a Mississippian in 1970-something.
Oh.
What does the agricultural center do?
They teach. So there were actually foreigners while we were there. Funny enough, we're the foreigners. But there were other foreigners from another country. I don't remember where they said they were from. But it was another third world country, and they were there to learn how to farm. And so that farm teaches other either Filipinos or other just people in general how to farm and how to do it without wastefulness.
Yeah, just to be efficient farming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who runs that? Who runs the agricultural center? Didn't you hook up with a missionary family when you were over there?
Yeah, but they don't run that. That was just our field supervisor.
Okay. So how is the field supervisor connected to the agricultural center?
The field supervisors, they're not really.
They're not really.
They're just... Like, they live there. They live in Davao, so it's only a 2-hour drive.
Yeah.
But it's also part of, it's like kind of part of the IMB. I don't know really how to describe it because we didn't really ask
those questions.
They
just probably have some handshake agreements.
Yeah.
They all probably know each other. And
yeah, they all know each other. Because, so whenever they do the gap year program, Kuya Joe, who is our field supervisor, one of our field supervisors, he lives there on site with the other Nehemiah team gap year students. And so, like, anytime they have a Nehemiah team going to the Philippines for agriculture, they send them to the farm. And gotcha. We got sent to the farm this year.
I see. Gotcha. Now, so let's talk about who you stayed with or where you lived for 3 weeks. Did you live with a family? Did you live in a dorm? Were there other Nehemiah team people with you? So talk to us a little bit about how you lived.
All right. So whenever we got there, we all thought we were going to be staying in the big house, which is literally exactly how it sounds, just a big old house. But we ended up staying in where the dorms were, which is a two-story building. And downstairs, like, you're going into the building, and the first thing you see is a big old room with a bunch of tables and chairs. And that's where we did, like, our debrief or anything like that. Anytime we needed to talk to each other as a team, that's where we met. And then if you go to the left, there's a kitchen area. There's the kitchen and then, like, the dining room. And then you go outside and you go up the stairs, and there's 8 rooms,
okay,
each with 5 beds. And then at the end of the hallway is, on the left is the girls and on the right is the boys' bathroom areas. And the showers were exactly like they were at orientation. You still had a bucket bath situation.
Bucket showers.
But you at least had a closed door, which was nicer. And then the toilets, there was 2 showers, 2 shower rooms, and then 2 toilet rooms. The toilets, it was a toilet, but there was no toilet seat, so you weren't supposed to sit on it.
Yeah.
So
that gets interesting. Huh?
It is. Yeah, it does.
A whole new learning curve that you have to kind of work through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
But okay. In my dorm, I stayed with 2 of the other girls. So there were 6 girls and 4 boys on our teams. And so if there's 5 beds in a room, they had to split up the girls. So we were split into 2 groups of 3. My roommates were both 2 15-year-olds whose name are Ruth and Soraya, and they're both from the north. Ruth is from Minnesota and Soraya is from Ohio. And then the boys' room was actually right next to us. And then on the other side of the boys' room was our leaders' room, which, and our leaders, and then we had our media intern girl. Her name is Faith, and she lives in California, but she spent a summer last year in Cambodia, and so this year she decided to use the talents that God has given her to go literally all over the Philippines. She stayed with our team the longest, but she went everywhere just taking pictures of all the Filipino teams.
I like her title. Media intern girl.
Yeah. She's the
official.
Her official title is the Filipino media intern.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about a typical day as you were there. So you would wake up at a certain time at the dorm and tell us about it.
So,
okay. You'd eat breakfast?
I want to throw a question too, because I think this might help with the day. Emma, when did you have to turn your phone off?
I had to turn my phone off on June 5th.
So, Emma, what did you do without your phone all day, every day, when you had downtime?
Talked to people, and sometimes I'd just sit in silence, and I'd read my Bible a lot, and I'd write a lot of letters.
And when did you turn your phone back on?
June 29th or 30th. I think it was 29th for us, but like.
So you 30th. Heard it here today on episode 4 of the FBC Brookhaven podcast that a high school senior can survive 3 weeks.
And it's highly recommended. It was great.
Out their phone.
It was great.
And she loved it.
I did.
Yeah. So obviously it made a change in your life, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so back to the typical day. Thank you, Mom. I appreciate that. That seems very important to Mom.
Very important. When Mom was trying to track her across the ocean, goodness, and she was still in Mentone,
couldn't find
Alabama.
Her on that snap map.
That's right.
All right, so a typical day, you would eat breakfast.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I would wake up every day from like 5:30 to 6. It depends when I heard Ruth's little alarm go off. She never woke up to it, but I did. It was just a little beeping. But I would wake up to that, and then we had breakfast at 6:30. So I like just got up really fast and I'd go get ready, and then I'd go do a little quiet time on the basketball court that's like 2 feet away from our door. And then we would have our breakfast, which a breakfast there is not a breakfast that I really loved. because I don't eat eggs. And that's like all they eat for breakfast.
Because it's a breakfast food.
That's yeah, right. I just don't like that breakfast food. And it was our typical meal, if it wasn't American, because we did bring cereal, so we had cereal sometimes. But our typical breakfast would look like Spam, rice, soy sauce, and eggs, and some type of fruit, which is normally mangoes or watermelon. So I would always eat the fruit, and I'd always eat the rice. But I really didn't like the Spam, and I really don't like eggs. So I didn't really have a big breakfast while I was there normally. So I had two different days, because we did, for 6 days, we did a sidewalk. Like, we hand-mixed concrete and laid.
Built a sidewalk.
You mixed concrete and built a sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Okay, that was a day.
That was 6 days.
You were a construction worker.
I was. And then the other days we were in villages.
All right, and what were you doing in the villages?
So in the villages, I'll give you a Sunday, because those are easier to explain. On a Sunday, we would leave the farm by 8, and we'd go to whatever village. It was probably like 30, 45 minutes away, typically. And we would go to their church service, where they would always make one of our boys preach last minute. They'd walk up to one of the boys and be like, "Hey, do you mind preaching?" And so they'd be like, "Oh, yeah, sure." So they'd preach. One church, we actually had to sing a song in their language. Didn't know we had to sing that song in their language, but we sure did. We sang Goodness of God and Messiah. And there was always a few testimonies given, and we did things called dramas. We did a bunch of dramas, where one of them, it was called Sin Chair, and there was a chair that said, "Do not touch." And there was a curious girl who touched the chair and got stuck to the chair. There was an anxious girl who didn't even look at the chair and just sat down and then realized she was stuck in the chair. And then there were two boys that were representing pride, and so they were all like, "Oh, we can touch the chair, like nothing's going to happen to us." They touched the chair and got stuck. Then there was me and Ruth. We were the gossiping girls, and we were like, "Oh, look at them. Like, we can touch that chair and never get stuck. Like, we'll be fine. We touch the chair, we get stuck." And then there's the Christian who comes in, and he's like, "Read the Bible, read the Bible." He holds the Bible in front of us, and we all reject him, but he leaves the Bible in front. And I was the first person to pick up and read the Bible. And once I picked up and read the Bible, I was released from the chair. And one by one, everyone got released from the chair. And the last girl sitting in the chair, the anxious one, it took her the longest to get rid of like that anxiety. And she stood up and she took off the do not enter sign, or do not touch sign. And it said sin behind it. And so a lot of Filipinos, the way that they learn, like in school, is by dramas and by watching TV shows that have like lessons and stuff like that. And so we had to adapt to their way of learning versus ours. And so that was one way that we did that. And then we'd sing more songs. They'd give the message, and then we give more testimonies. And then lunches at churches were always interesting. One morning I watched our lunch get killed.
All right, can I pause you for just a second? Yeah, before we talk about what you just said.
Yeah.
Because we will talk about that.
Yeah, it was an interesting morning.
Who were y'all doing the dramas in front of? Were these
the Filipino church?
Oh, the church.
It was the church, but the churches were the village people. Yeah.
You know, their friends or neighbors.
Yep.
Okay.
So it was just a bunch of Filipino people that lived in that village. So we went to like three different villages doing that.
And you could tell that they were interested.
Yeah.
And that was how they understood principles or teachings.
It is.
Yeah.
There was actually the other day I was on Facebook and I saw one of the Filipino videos that they took of us. And so I got to watch.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Did you watch the drama?
Did you learn from yourself?
I sure did.
Okay. All right. Now we've got to go back to this. You said you watched
my lunch get
killed. I have a picture of either a chicken with its neck being wrung or maybe something worse. I don't know.
So
we're talking about lunch, people.
The Filipinos, they love to eat snacks throughout the day as well. Like, you'll never go hungry in Filipino culture unless you just don't like the food. So I was eating this little muffin thing. It was, I don't even know what it was, but it was good.
Yeah.
So I was eating it, and I was standing talking to Ava, one of the girls on the team. And we looked to our left, and we hear a chicken screaming.
Yep, I knew it.
And we looked, and they had cut off part of it, but they didn't kill it, and so it flew away. It like went, it was like on a cliffside. So I went down the cliff, and the Filipinos ran and got our chicken. And that was our lunch that day.
Nice.
Yeah.
What did they fry them up?
No.
Boiled them?
It was boiled.
Yeah.
It's called native chicken, and all Filipinos, that's what they call it.
One thing in life to not be is a native Filipino chicken. Oh, my goodness.
But they love to serve any guests, whether it's their family or like even us. They like to serve all guests on Sundays native chicken. So it's normally served with fish and fruit. So we had native chicken, fish, and fruit. And that was our typical Sunday lunch.
Gotcha. All right. So you said in the morning you would do some church things.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then you had chicken.
Native chicken.
Very fresh.
Very.
Very fresh native chicken. All right. Now, after lunch, what happened?
So after lunch on both Sundays, we went around into the villages inviting people to bring their kids to the little VBS that we hosted.
There we go.
And the one VBS, we were in a giant gym, but the other one, the village was smaller, so we were just still back in the church. But we did a lesson with the kids. I think we did the straight path lesson, which was Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And so we taught them that verse, and we taught them what that meant, and we played a little game with them where one kid would be blindfolded, and then there'd be four or five of us standing in their way so they couldn't make it to the other side of the room. And their other team member who was not blindfolded would explain to them how to get to that side. And it never worked. We would always block them, or something would happen. They would just run into a wall one time. And then the next time that we did it, the other team member would hold their hand and walk with them. And so we explained to them, like, that's what walking with God can be like, is you have someone holding you and holding you accountable, and they're bringing you along with them, alongside them. And so you need friends, you need community, and God will guide you, is how that lesson went.
Yeah, and they...
they loved it.
They received it.
Yes, they received it.
Yeah.
And then we played other games, too.
Did y'all have translators?
Yeah, we had. Yeah. We would have different translators every week, which was just the youth of the village, because all the youth
speak English.
They know English because they have phones.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they want to do most things on their phone, they have to know English.
That is an interesting fact right there, that they're learning English not from school or parents or culture. It's
because
just
because of their cell phones.
Their phones. Wow.
Because when they started, I'm pretty sure Kuya Jess, who's like over Nehemiah Teams, started Nehemiah Teams. He said whenever they went there before, no one knew English.
Hmm.
But now that they have phones, once phones came into play, the people that have them know English a little more than everyone else.
So, Mom, all right, what was your contact like with Emma during this 3 week plus period? You had no contact?
I had no contact with Emma herself during this time.
Okay.
Like she said, she turned her phone off, and so I could not track her location. I could not text her. There was no contact. Now, I did almost halfway through her trip get a package. When they left Mentone, Alabama, to travel to the Philippines, they sent home some of the supplies that they needed in Mentone but didn't need in the Philippines. So I got a box back with a letter, and that was the first time I had heard from her since she left. But we had, she had a couple of college kid leaders who were, you heard her talk about some of her leaders, and they were fantastic at updating us parents. We were part of a Signal app. There was a group there, a group chat where they would send us pictures and updates every day. Now, of course, the Philippines are 13 hours ahead of us, so it was always a weird, you know, we'd wake up in the morning to pictures of things that they had done while we were sleeping, which was their day. So I had pictures almost every day of what they'd been doing, but no contact from Emma herself.
Yeah.
There was lots of prayer.
But I mean, I guess there was some comfort knowing that, okay,
absolutely,
you know, I do see a picture and I know she's okay, but just because she's your daughter. And let's for the people listening, Emma, how old are you?
17.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're still very closely connected to our parents at 17. And you go from talking to your daughter every day, all throughout the day, and being able to track them and know where they are at all times, to nothing.
To nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's a hard, it was a big hard leap. Thing. Yeah.
One of the things that I enjoyed when she first got there, their first few days, they hosted, you'll have to help me with this, a sports camp for the youth. What was that?
Oh, we did a youth. Are you talking about that picture where that girl's looking at me? Or are you talking
No.
Oh.
The mud racing and all that.
That was youth camp.
Youth camp.
The first day we were there, we did youth camp for 3 days.
Nice.
Emma, was youth camp your most exciting thing in the Philippines?
Yeah.
I feel like we need to maybe camp out here for just a second. There's either a good story or a not so good story that might be great for this.
Well, I will say I came home with one less shirt than I started with because it was completely covered in mud. Same with those shorts. But let me tell you, Filipinos, they love to crawl in the mud. That is their most favorite thing ever. So we were expected to crawl through the mud with our Filipino teams. So whenever we got there, I'll say this. Whenever we got there, there's 12 of us and there were 6 family groups is what they called them. It's the same thing as like our church camp or our youth camp. So 2 of us got sent into every single one. I was sent into Team Mercy. They were all different like Fruits of the Spirit things. And it was me and Isaiah were on Team Mercy. And we got to teach them how to share the gospel because they were not saying that they're all Christians because that'd be bad to assume that. But most of them there came from a church, so they have heard the gospel before. So we taught them how to share the gospel. We went through a book with them about a missionary. It was just like, it was, I don't even remember who we talked about. It was, he was Irish, but we talked about a missionary with them. And we were just with them like the whole time. We were with them for 3 days straight, just with our 20 people, which my group was the biggest. We had like 30 something. Every other group had like 18 and below. My group was pushing 35 every day. So that was fun. But on day 2 of us being there, we did something called Extreme Games. And I wore my homecoming shirt on accident of all shirts to wear. And we, our first game that we did was a game where you had a tarp and it had a lot of holes and there was a ping pong ball that you were guiding through the tarp to get to one of the holes to put it in a basket on the ground. Our team was the only team to never get that, but it's okay. The next thing that we did was a game where one person on their big toe had a rope attached to it and on the other end was a bag full of water. Mind you, we're not supposed to drink the water.
Especially if it's attached to people's toes. Yeah. So wait, all right. So they had a bag. Wait, what?
Okay, the bag was attached to a string.
I mean, I heard that.
Which was attached to someone's foot. And
like
they put
tied on their foot?
Yeah, and they put the string on a pole. And so the foot controlled how high up or down the bag went.
I had it opposite. I feel like the water was controlling the foot. No. But you're saying
other way around. The foot was controlling where the bag of water went.
For if you're listening at home, it's not that big of a bag of water.
No, it's a small bag of water.
I had it like.
It's like a snack size Ziploc bag of water. All
right. So we're toe controlling water bags.
And the girl that I was with, her name is Kim. She was like, she took me under her wing and translated everything for me because nothing was in English. Everything was in Bisaya, which is the language they speak. And she said, Emma, I don't want to do this one. And I was like, we don't have to do this one if you don't want to. And then our leader walked up to us and she said, we all have to do it or else we don't get points. So we're like, okay, we're doing it. So the whole point of the game was for the person whose foot was not attached to the water was to bite the bag without licking the person's foot. I was the person who had to bite the bag without licking the person's foot.
Extreme Games.
I had lots of trust in our team leader to tell me where to put my mouth whenever I was biting the bag.
Extreme Games.
So you couldn't see. We were blindfolded?
Both of us were blindfolded. Oh. The girl with the foot attached to the water and me. We were both blindfolded. And somehow I did it on the first try. So that was a God thing. Had to be.
Yeah. I mean, small miracles.
Didn't lick the girl's foot. So. And then the next thing we did was so we climbed down a rock wall into a river. They looked at me and said, "You shouldn't do this one." And I was like, "Why?" And they're like, "I just don't think you should do that one." And I was like, "All right, if you don't think I should, I'm not going to." So I did not participate in that one. And then the next one.
But you can do the toe bag game.
I can do that one, but I can't go down a rock wall.
Oh, my goodness.
Then the next thing I did not participate in, but I helped get the team members up, was a giant tarp, which you would think you'd be sliding down. It was on a hill. It was covered in cooking oil, and they had to go up it. And I was at the top helping because there was like a bunch of boys that had to get up first because they were stronger. And so I was helping them get up so they didn't fly backwards. And then that one was just not a fun one, but it's okay. We made it through.
I haven't heard any of them that sound
fun
to me.
We need to make it to the mud one.
The mud one was my last one, actually.
All right, let's get to the mud one. Tell us about the mud one.
The mud one.
This is the one where we lost our homecoming shirt.
Yeah, lost my homecoming shirt. So, we're not supposed to take off our shoes in the Philippines because there's, like, worms that are in the dirt that'll just go straight into your feet. Mm. I took off my shoes, but nothing happened. But I got in trouble for taking off my shoes. But I didn't want to ruin my shoes. I didn't want to ruin my Hokas. So, I didn't. I took them off, and I went through the mud. I was crawling, and there were ropes above you, so you had to, like crawl.
Like army crawl
through the mud. And every time I'd look up, there'd be a Filipino watching me. They were asking me, "Ate, Emma, you okay? Are you okay?" And Ate just means older sister. So if they knew how old I was, so if I was older than them, they'd call me Ate. They're like, "Ate, Emma, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you good? You need to stop?" And I was like, "I'm fine." And then I...
You must have been giving off a different vibe, though.
It was so bad. Yeah. I did not want to do that, but I did it for the Filipinos to not disappoint them. So
yeah.
That was Extreme Games.
And this was part of a youth camp, you know, that y'all did for 3 days.
Yeah. That was day two.
Well, it sounds like y'all had an amazing time, including this toe and water bag blindfold game. Which I'm still,
will not be bringing that.
I'm still trying to picture it. I don't know really. Trying to get the concept.
Yeah.
So it sounds like y'all had plenty of ministry
opportunities. We did. We had lots of ministry opportunities.
With all different ages. And you got to encounter the culture in a real way, being there for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so kind of as we're wrapping up, you know, this is an opportunity for high school young people to engage in foreign missions in a longer period of time. Would you do it again?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. It was so that one I couldn't do again though because it's 14 to 17 year olds. So,
but somebody listening,
yes,
here,
you should do it. Highly recommend
a young person who's interested in missions. Mm-hmm. You would encourage it?
Yes, yeah. I would highly recommend it. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was so rewarding.
Good. Well, Lisa, what would you say to a parent of a young person who, you know, is interested in missions at this level? Because this is a different level. And so what would you say to that parent, you know, who might be apprehensive about letting their daughter or son do something like this for that long of a period of time?
Trust in God. He's faithful. And listen to your kids, because there's not a teenage Holy Spirit. There's not a children's Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. There's one Holy Spirit who's working in all of our lives. And when she came and said, "I want to go to the Philippines," I said, "Okay, let's see how we can do it." And he was faithful. God was faithful through everything between raising the money that she needed. You know, when we got the bill for the plane ticket to the Philippines, I about fell out. It's been a minute since I've booked expensive plane tickets. And, you know, God was just faithful. There was lots of time spent praying ahead of time, of course, and just trust that he'll take care of his kids. He loves his kids more than we do. And that's hard to understand.
Yeah. But it's so important to hear and to be reminded of. And Emma, what's next for you missions-wise? Is there something that you're thinking about or, you know, wanting to pursue? Or we're just going to have a senior year and deal with it later?
I was thinking about doing a gap year because I don't know if I immediately want to go to college. But I also think, like, I would love to do long-term missions. Mm-hmm. And to do long-term missions, you do need to have a degree. And so I don't know if it'd be easier for me just to go to college or if I should take that gap year, but that's just a lot more praying that needs to be done.
Well, and we have an audience that just heard that, mm-hmm. and that would be a way that we could, you know, join in praying for you that God would give you wisdom in that. Because there are, you know, the things that you can do now will help you in the future.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. And if it's education and it can put you where you want to be. One of the things that you have in your tool bag now, though, is you've seen God's faithfulness in a real, real way. And anybody that does missions, that's one of the things that we count on.
Yeah.
He's faithful, and he'll make a way, and he'll provide a way. So any last words, any final thoughts, anything extreme? So I think we, like... So if you're going to the Philippines, be prepared for different bathroom things and different foods or ways of acquiring food. And then I'm really left with this. Filipinos love crawling around in the mud. You said that.
They do.
That's important. And but all in all, the Lord has plenty of work to do over there for somebody who wants to go.
Huh? Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, thank you all for this extra time. And
wait, I have one more thing. I'm so sorry.
Please, no.
So one thing, every morning we do a quiet time and then we do our team time. And so one thing that we did on day 14, so I was like midway, we read Acts 14. And then we read 2 Corinthians 11:23-27, which I'm not going to read all that right now, but if you want to go home and read that, you can do that. But then it says, my commitment as a Christian. So I'm just going to read that because it changed my perspective on a lot of things. I'm part of the fellowship of the unashamed. I have Holy Spirit power. The die has been cast. I've stepped over the line. The decision has been made. I'm a disciple of his. I will not look back, let up, slow down, back away, or be still. My past is redeemed. My present makes sense. My future is secure. I am finished and done with low living, sight walking, small planning, smooth knees, colorless dreams, tamed visions, mundane talking, cheap living, dwarfed goals. I no longer needed preeminence, prosperity, position, promotions, plaudits, or popularity. I don't have to be right, first, tops, recognized, praised, regarded, or rewarded. I now live by faith, lean on his presence, walk by patience, lift by prayer, and labor by power. My face is set, my gait is fast, my goal is heaven, my road is narrow, my way rough, my companions few, my guide reliable, my mission clear. I cannot be bought, compromised, detoured, lured away, turned back, deluded, or delayed. I will not flinch in the face of sacrifice, hesitate in the face of adversary, negotiate at the table of the enemy, ponder in the pool of popularity, or meander in the maze of mediocrity. I won't give up, shut up, let up until I have stayed up, stored up, prayed up, paid up, preached up for the cause of Christ. I'm a disciple of Jesus. I must go until he comes. Give till I drop, preach till all know, and work till he stops me. And when he comes for his own, he will have no problem recognizing me. My banner will be clear. So that's just what I wanted to end this on.
It's nothing else there.
I'm speechless. Amen.
That's it.
Thanks.
Welcome.